Welcome to Rice Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Joyce Starr, author of more than a dozen books on wide-ranging topics, including the work Defend Your Condo and Homeowner Rights. I'm also publisher of the first Homeowner's Defense Kit. For books on homeowners' rights, health, and hearth, please visit our publications website at starpublications.com. That's star with two R's. The Homeowner's Defense Kit trilogy, which includes my book, is the first link on the left. We also offer homeowners' health and empowerment counseling. Our topic today, how to attract and emit positive energy while repelling negative energy. Our guest is Christmas Miller, author of Illuminations, The Road Less Traveled, a modern-day Sears journal of the human experience, published by Evolve Publishing, Inc. The mother of five, Christmas has extraordinary abilities. From a very early age, she was able to intuit information about the positive and negative energy that people project and attract, directly or indirectly. She's helped thousands of people heal various aspects of their lives using her remarkable abilities to perceive, see, and hear their personal energy, including mental images and sounds. Welcome, Christmas.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's just a delight to have you. And Christmas, I know that people will be very interested to hear a bit about your personal evolution and when you first discovered that you had these talents and what you, you know, how you reacted, what you did about them. You must have been quite young.
I was around the age of 7, and fortunately for me, I had a grandmother who was very loving and nurturing and very intuitive herself, a very spiritual woman. And so she explained it to me that the Holy Spirit and the angels were working with me, and it was nothing to be afraid of. So I had very good guidance.
Were you able to see the energy of your young friends at that time?
I did, actually. For me, it was relatives, actually, because I come from a huge family. And my mother, being the baby twin of 19, a lot of her siblings had gone on and passed on. So it was one of those things that it was relatives. And when children actually say they have an imaginary friend, sometimes it is an actual relative that they may be perceiving, such as what I experienced. But yes.
When you told your family that you could see energy, how did they react beyond your grandmother? And what were you able to do with that information at a very young age?
Well, I didn't know exactly what was happening to me, so I would often express my interpretation of my interaction with the person because they appeared very real to me. And so after a while, my grandmother would ask me, well, what do they look like and what did they say and that sort of thing. So that's the way that it was apparent to her that it was someone in the family, clearly someone that had died I didn't know. So it was that type of experience with me. And as I got older, I began to understand that it wasn't something everybody was doing.
Fox News actually had a special piece last week about the increasing number of young children who have great abilities to see beyond what we normally see, to hear, to see, to intuit. Do you feel that this is an accelerating or exploding phenomena with younger children? It's certainly rare amongst people over 50, I would say.
Well, it's a two-part answer. I don't feel it's anything new, so that's the first part of it. But as far as it becoming a accepted, perhaps is the better way I would say it, phenomena, it makes it more apparent. It's like you don't notice something until you see more of it. But this isn't something that hasn't been the case. It's been more suppressed in the way that we've evolved human being-wise over the years. People were afraid of it, so it was something you didn't talk about. You suppressed it. But now we're living in an age where people are becoming more comfortable. They see something more frequently, it gets a lot less intimidating, and so therefore it becomes more acceptable.
So there may not be more children or an increasing number of children, just be that there's more people willing to admit that their children have this capability.
And actually do something about it, research it, follow it up, find out what's going on versus dismissing it, yes.
Well, you've spoken in your book about breaking energy into energy hosts, energy addicts, and energy neutralizers. Can you talk about these concepts and explain what you're trying to communicate?
Absolutely. We tend to function in forms of energy, and when I do what I do, which is interpret energy, it comes across in two different types of ways, most often positively or negatively. And we all can identify with the negative more easily. That is a form of doubt, negative energy. Fear is a form of negative energy. Being upset is a form of negative energy. Depression is a form of negative energy. So being that we're more familiar with it and it seems more easier to accept, we tend to migrate to that more. So when we're in positive states, you see the opposite. You see the contrast. You see happiness. You see motivation, and you feel excited. You feel optimistic. And so when I'm looking at people, they're likely functioning in one of those two ways. And so I've divided them into the common ways of how I see we interact with each other. You have what I call the energy host, which is the person which we all play a role as a host, who actually is the person who primarily is the target when we're interacting with one another. There's always someone on the receiving end, and there's always someone on the giving end. In the host position, you typically are receiving frequently, and you're also being drained frequently. And the other aspect of an interaction with the host is what I title a person who is kind of in a way like an addict. An addict is a person, or energy addict specifically, is a person who tends to consciously drain your energy and in an unconscious way drain your energy. Those who are aware, those who don't care, those who are all about me, 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 this is what I need, pay attention to me, give me my attention, I need your resources, your time. Those are people who tend to drain your energy. And so a host is likely to be sucked dry most of the time, and we all see them. We have them in our family. We work with them. But in an unconscious way, sometimes we all have things that happen in our life where we do need support. And the difference between someone who is functioning in an unconscious way and a conscious way is that an unconscious person needs that help temporarily. They get what they need, and then they move on. An addict tends to do this over and over and over because that's what they feel they need. They become codependent. And a neutralizer is actually someone who is very balanced. They know when to not let you suck their energy dry, as some people term, like a psychic vampire. And this is something very emotional, too, that can take place. They drain you emotionally. They can drain you financially. They can drain you physically. But a neutralizer knows the boundaries in that role. They can be a host, and they can keep their boundaries. So in this respect, I see people tend to operate in usually one of those three ways.
In terms of the host is being drained by the addict, correct?
Absolutely, yes.
Right. The host is being drained. Does the host become addicted to being drained?
That is very possible. There's a two-way street with that. But most likely the host at some point put a boundary, which moves them into the neutralizer category. In some instances, when the host feels guilt or a sense of obligation, and we have this often play out with our interpersonal relationships most often, then it becomes a situation where, yes, it becomes a two-way codependent type of situation.
What about the energy addict? Does the energy addict ever get better on their own spontaneously, or they really need a lot of help? If you're an addict, you need help.
It depends on one's intentions. Again, when we're referring to those, and my interpretation of one who is consciously aware, they really don't care. It's really all about them. So you see selfishness and ego playing a huge role in their intentions and their approach to people, and we all have seen them. It's all about them. It's what they need. It's on their time, and they don't want to hear about your issue. It's let me tell you about what's going on with me, and it plays out in so many different ways, but consciously they really don't care. It's what they feel they need to get from you. But in those instances when someone is unconsciously aware, they're in a space where they need support, they usually don't stay there long. We all have those moments where we have to have our little pity party, but then we tend to move on, most healthy people in that case.
In terms of a pity party, it is wonderful if you can actually give that person constructive advice, or at least be a sounding board for, you know, 20 minutes or an hour or whatever it takes and actually see a positive result from it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And usually, in most cases, when we all have been in a valley, and I call these low periods in life, and we're having one of those periods now with our economy and the housing market and interest rates and gas prices, when we find ourselves in that valley, everybody vacillates, you know, from feeling optimistic to wondering, okay, when's the other shoe going to drop? You tend to move yourself forward still. You don't stay there too long. You don't stay in that space. Sometimes it's healthy to have that, you know, I got to just let it all go and have a moment. It's good to not suppress emotions and all of that, that energy that feels overwhelming. It's a good way to channel it somehow. And a supportive person, a host, can be that for you. But when it becomes too much of a codependent situation, as we all know, codependency is not healthy in any case. So, yeah, it's appropriate when someone can offer that support. And then that person chooses to move themselves forward, which in most cases people do.
You're providing a service to people primarily through the telephone. Is that correct? You're doing teleconsultations about
yes.
their energy?
That is absolutely correct. And people wonder how you do that.
Right.
I can't wait until they come up with the buttons to connect all the dots of how energy works. And we are moving in that direction scientifically. Someday we'll be able to explain this in a logical way where everyone can feel comfortable and not feel afraid. But the human spirit and body is a phenomenon in and of itself. But in terms of how I work, yes, I do this primarily over the phone. There are instances, Joyce, though, when I'm out and about with the public or doing private workshops and events that I work with people that way, too.
Please give us some examples, because it is hard to relate to the idea that you actually seeing the energy, the life experience of a stranger, effectively, through a telephone call. Although we all know that we can feel the energy of people we know and care about over the years, but what you're doing goes beyond that.
Well, it's very simple in a lot of ways. It's like this, and I'll give you two examples. We all have had those experiences where we've been thinking about somebody or their loved one or friend keeps popping up in their mind or in their spirit, in their heart, and they just feel a gentle pressing that maybe perhaps they need to make that call to someone. And then all of a sudden, that person calls them. And they say, well, you know, I was just thinking about you. That's why I wanted to call you. And you say, well, I was just thinking about you, too. You've been on my mind for the last few days. And that's a form of energy communication. I think sometime last year I was reading an article on MSN where they were questioning, is this really something odd? Because they've been doing some research on this fact of people feeling and thinking of a person, and then shortly thereafter getting this kind of communication, they were starting to look a little closer at that.
What did they find?
Well, I didn't follow the article thoroughly enough. I just thought it was funny because
uh-huh.
someone actually placed an article about that
right.
To give some interest to it. But my thing about energy is this. We all know that electricity runs through our homes. We know microwaves run all over the place. But yet we don't see it. And energy is just that. It's not always something you have to see. So when you're feeling something about a person, usually what happens is 9 times out of 10, you're going to be validated in what you feel, or they confirm that, or something happens to confirm that feeling. What I do is do exactly just that. And the person on the other end of the line confirms and validates what I say. And over time, in some cases, when we're looking out at events, that information is validated as well. So it really is a feeling of energy. It is an interpretation of visual images of energy that I get. And it is also an audible interpretation of energy. And you know from, because you write so many wonderful books, when you're reading silently to yourself, you hear yourself reading to yourself even though you're not speaking. And it's the same way with me. When I'm interpreting energy, I'm interpreting energy in a way that it's audible as well. And that takes it in a whole nother direction when you're dealing with people who we're still trying to figure out whether they have actually survived consciousness-wise their physical deaths. So it's a feeling, hearing, audible thing.
You just jumped there at the end of that to people who are no longer with us.
Yes.
So I want to divide it between those who are talking to you about themselves, and their energy and their love life and their work life and those who are not with us. So I assume that many come to you to talk about family who are lost or gone. Is that it?
That is oftentimes the case. And I am able to interpret audibly the information that I get. Sometimes it's very simple in a conversation like we're having, and sometimes it's not as easy to interpret in that way. But when I'm dealing with an individual, clearly they're talking to me, and I can hear them. So the information usually plays out in a variety of ways. Either I'm feeling and seeing what's going on with them. Now, when we're talking about vibrational energy, and this is taking it to a whole other level, and I'll keep it short, when it comes to other energies, because energy is energy. It doesn't discriminate or take a particular shape. We know that. Energy can transform itself in different ways. So it's the same thing with us. When we die, I personally believe, we transform energetically to a non-physical existence. And so, therefore, I do feel that I am collecting information from angelic energy, which oftentimes present themselves in sessions with clients, and I'm interpreting audibly the information that they give. So,
could you clarify that? Interpreting audibly.
Yeah.
Those words.
Yes, I'm actually hearing information being given to me.
Okay. You're hearing it as if the person were talking to you in the same room.
Yes, absolutely. The very difficult example of when it's hard to hear in some instances is it's very clear like we're talking now. And a difficult example of that is like you and I on a cell phone and I'm getting bits and pieces of what you're saying. It almost feels as though it's choppy. I can't quite get it all. And that's the worst example of what I've had trying to hear or interpret audibly.
If you can't hear, or it's choppy in that case, and that's, of course, not the person you're talking to, but a third party, then do you find yourself saying, I'm sorry, I just can't bring it all together?
Oh, absolutely. And then what typically happens is just like with any of our senses, if one of our senses isn't functioning to its optimum, then the other senses kick in. So then some other way of information is provided with what I'm supposed to be interpreting. And it's very, when you're reading energy, and it's constantly changing, as we all know, energy changes. That's a scientific fact. When I'm trying to interpret that, people are constantly changing their actions and their feelings, and all of those are forms of energy. It's my job to interpret what's going on. And it's quite a hefty job, especially when we're looking out at events futuristically.
If a person is very troubled, and obviously there is some trouble in their heart, that's why they contact you. Now they're troubled, and you're taking in their energy. In a sense, does that make you the host at that point?
It makes me very much the host, yes, because I am on a receiving end. The thing about my role, and I understood this from the very beginning when I started doing this work, an energy, you can feel it. It's just like when you walk into a room and there's a lot of negative people, and everyone listening perhaps have had an experience where you've walked into a boardroom or an office environment or even your own house, and you're like, I can tell how this is going to go tonight. It's that same example. And when there is a person who has perhaps a troubled experience going on with them, because not everyone calls because they're in trouble. A lot of people call because they want to avoid a mistake.
Okay.
So
we need
yeah.
to talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So in that example, it feels heavy. It feels, you know, very heavy. And so my job is to be a conduit to deliver what I need to deliver, but not take that on. And really, I don't take it on. I couldn't do what I do if I took on everybody's energy and it stayed.
Do you say to them, your energy is so negative. Do you find yourself saying that?
No, I've never had to say that, actually, even though in some cases that has been the case. I've never had to say that because, you know, with the majority of people, and I would say probably over 98% of them, they know how they're feeling. And a lot of times, even if they're not sure what to make about the experience with me, they're coming with the intention of, I want to find some solution or clarity about the situation because my intent is to change it. And typically when I'm dealing with people, even the ones who are curious and not sure, have never had that experience, I got to say that the overwhelming majority has been very serious about, I'm trying to make a change, whatever the circumstances are. So that's a good thing. So they know where they are. Their goal is to change where they are, to to get where they're trying to go.
That makes it lighter for you.
It makes it easier because the energy is constantly shifting. Very rarely do I get somebody who's miserable and they like it and they want to stay there.
But even if they want to change and you're the host and you're helping them, but you put a line between yourself and the other party,
mm-hmm.
What is it that you're able to tell them to do? They've explained to you and you've intuited their energy, but now what type of advice can you give based on energy?
It depends on the circumstances. And here's the thing about the work that I do. It's never really to tell someone what to do. And oftentimes people misinterpret this type of work as though the answers are going to be here, that there's going to be a script or a blueprint or even a memo.
A memo.
Yeah, of what they're to do next. Rarely do I see people in life beeline from A to Z like that. It's an unfolding, which is the whole idea of why I've written the book, Illuminations, because life is a journey, and we all know that when we go on a trip, we got to pack, we got to get gas, we got to eat, maybe stop along the way on the restroom, shop a little bit. It's never really this beeline type of thing. So when I'm dealing with individuals, it's really looking at what they need to understand that's keeping them where they are. And it's always their choice to understand that they are in a powerful position. It's more about empowering them with information that they need to be reminded of, or actually in some cases that they're not aware of, so they can make the best proactive choices for themselves.
But you might be introduced to somebody for the first time on the call,
mm-hmm.
So you don't have a lot of life background, you don't know many things about what could empower them,
mm-hmm.
had you known them for a couple of weeks at least.
And even in those cases, that's not always the way it ends up. That's the beautiful thing about reading a person's energy, because you're sort of reading, I want to say soul. It depends on what culture you're of, because some people's culture, they refer to it as soul, and some people may call it something else. But for argument's sake, or for listeners who are familiar, to make it easier, it's like reading a person's soul, and that's a universal thing. That doesn't change. You can be a president today. You can be a homemaker tomorrow. But what you come here to do, what areas that you are falling deficient in, certain things that are going on in your life right now that you may need to strengthen, those things don't change. Your job, your partner, all of those things change, your religion, your political affiliation. But when you're reading a person's energy and their soul, you're reading the things that are the basis of who they are. So it's not one of those things that can flop.
What's the difference between a psychic and an intuitive, such as yourself?
Well, they're pretty much one and the same. The only difference between what I do is that I'm a practicing psychic who's proficient with doing this repetitively. Everyone has intuition, and everyone has that ability to connect with God or spirit in a very direct way. You don't need somebody like me. And most often, someone like me, who takes my work seriously and ethically, will tell you, you don't need to create a dependent relationship on me. But everyone has that, and my calling is to help people recognize that they can help themselves. So in this instance, it's really one and the same.
So you are both a psychic and an intuitive.
An intuitive is someone who is intuitive. They're psychically able to sense. And psychic is just being able to read outside of our normal five senses, understand and conceive information and know it without knowing it, that you know it, information, gather it, outside of the typical, you know, research, understanding, being with the person, knowing anything about them, smelling, feeling, all outside of what's traditionally our five senses. And
but you don't predict the future, correct?
Well, here's the thing about predicting the future. Some people would term what I do as predict the future. Oftentimes I say if I didn't get a prediction right, obviously that wasn't predicting the future. But I guess you could look at it that way. So for answering your question, you can say that I can predict the future based on the energy of how I'm reading a person's events today. Because actually, the future is based on the energy of how a person is moving today. And what I do is read the dominant energy of how a person is functioning. And usually, it comes out that way. But people often change, you know, their minds and directions and choices. So therefore, predictions are hard to nail down every single time because of that.
Can you give us a case that you've worked on, an example, or maybe more than one, of a person that you've worked with, male or female?
Well, I had a couple of examples that I think of that are very dear to me. And being a woman, you know, it's all about proactive, especially with our health. And I'm not a doctor, so I always tell people when I get health information, you need to call your doctors. You need to go in and get those follow-ups. So there was an instance where a woman, she was a mature woman in her age. Right? She was at least over 55, and she had never had a mammogram. And she had never had a session with an intuitive or psychic before. So she was referred by family or friends. And she found the session very interesting and pleasing. And one thing that nagged her, and she made a point to say it during the session and when she called me later, she said, you know, I appreciate you, you know, telling me that I need to consider these things and follow up with my doctor. She says, but look, I'm XY age, and I've never had a mammogram, and I don't plan on getting one, and I know you mean well, but I don't like those things, and I'm not going to do it. And during the session, it kept coming up that she needs to follow up with this. And sometimes stuff is pressed, and sometimes specific stuff, like, you know, in her case, the left breast, you need to have that check. You need to do a self-breast check. You need to follow up. And she understand why, because she had never done it. That was the confirmation. Well, months later, she called me back, and she said, you know what? I didn't believe anything you said, and I told you how I felt about it. But she said it kept nagging me. I kept hearing your voice in the back of my head, so I decided to go and get it checked. And they had found her in the early stages of breast cancer. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, I'm going to nail everything with everybody and everything that's wrong in their bodies. But, you know, I believe if I get it, I'm meant to give it. And there's a reason. Because if, like you say, I don't know her from Adam, and this is something that's repeated over and over, the woman's never done it before, and she had no intentions, but she went and did it, and then boom, proof positive is that she needed to have done it. Those are examples that I say it makes the work well worth doing.
When she came to you, did she say, I want to talk about my health?
Oh, no.
Or did she... Sorry?
No, it's never like that. Usually when I do a session, I always give information first. Sometimes I wish it was that simple where I can just have people just ask questions directly.
Right.
But, you know, there are people who just say, want to see if you know what you're doing, see if you're real, you know. But I've always done my work in this order. I give information first because I found that spirit prefers that I do that. And then we go into the questions. Most of the time, their questions are answered or touched upon. So I think it validates the session with me tremendously because you're not leading me. The other thing is, if there's something that you didn't already get a confirmation about, it may be something you need to know that you didn't know. So, again, I believe if I get it, I give it.
So in that hour that you spent with her, you could have talked about her job or many other issues, but something told you to use a part of that session to communicate about her physical well-being.
Well, and that's how it works. In other words, when I start a session, say we were to do one, and I get like a little bullet list of things that I'm told to talk about. And then as I go into that, specifics are given to me. So say, for example, with you, I may be instructed that we definitely need to cover health and wellness. We definitely need to cover family issues. We definitely need to cover relationship and finances. So say I'll go down that list, and then each category I go into, I'm given specific information as to why I need to cover it. And I give that, and then we go into the questions. So that's how I do it. And usually people say, well, I wanted to ask that, but you covered that, or I wanted to see, and now I understand why that. And I really prefer to do it that way.
That's very difficult for you. How long do you take before you sit down with the person, you're taking in the energy? How long does it take you to put that bullet list or to absorb the bullet list, so to speak?
It doesn't take long at all. It can take as little as a minute or two, because really it's just the categories. I kind of work in a strange way, and I think that's my corporate background that is being utilized. I categorize people's lives. You know, typically we have a love life, we have our family. Sometimes they come together depending on if somebody is with a partner or marriage. We have our careers, we have naturally our finances and that sort of thing. So I kind of get categories, and then I'm given specifics, and it can literally take as little as a couple of minutes. And I've never had it take a long period of time. And so people, I talk fast, if you hadn't gathered, and I move quickly. I try to move quickly to get to the point where they can ask their questions, and usually by then, if something hasn't already been answered, they will ask.
So you're quiet for a minute or two while you absorb. Is that correct?
I always go into a prayer before I start my day because, yes, I have to be quiet. I have to clear. And so I put myself in receive mode. It's just like if you turn your phones on, you know, people are going to start calling at a certain time. You know, I put myself open to spirit, to God, to start downloading information.
That's before you meet the person, but once you're sitting in the room with them, do you also go into that quiet mode?
Before each session, I go into a quiet mode before we start. So
before
I start. So by the time I go, okay, the recorder is on, I've done that.
So when they walk in and sit down, you've already absorbed their energy?
Well, remember, this is over the phone. So I guess
this is primarily the telephone and not one-on-one, right?
It wouldn't matter, really, if it was somebody that's sitting in front of me. The information is the same. I've had people, I had an example where a gentleman I had read for before on the phone actually came to an event where I was in person. He didn't tell me who he was. And the information came out exactly the same. And he says, I got a confession. And I say, what is that? He says, I gave you a false name, but he said everything you said was the same as before. I said, well, yeah, you might can fool me, but you can't fool spirit. And so in this example, he thought something was different that was going to come through, and he came in person. And sometimes you can understand why people would be able to think that. And so it wouldn't matter whether it was over the phone or not, just for those who wonder if it does make a difference. But yes, prior to, I sit and I go into receive mode with the person that I'm going to talk to, and then I deliver.
You've often stated in our many conversations, wonderful conversations, that everybody is capable of doing this to one level or another.
Mm-hmm.
And as I hear you talk and think about it, it comes to me to say that almost anyone can stop before they meet a new person and simply try to intuit what type of energy they're going to be meeting. But we don't. We don't do that. We are usually just simply taken by storm as to whether, you know, for good or for bad.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. And for some reason, we've grown to be accustomed, perhaps maybe by society, you know, denial of these natural human tendencies, and to not trust our intuition. It's so funny. This work has been perceived in such a negative light, you know, soothsayer and all of that. But we have so many examples of people who will have you second guess yourself, tell you to do so, and ask you to not trust your intuition. And everything about what I do is natural. It is. I've never been trained. I don't know how to read tarot cards, even though there are wonderful people who do. I've never learned astrology. I don't know numerology. This is an innate thing that I do. And I'm an example of every one of your listeners. So it's something that we're all capable of doing. It's just that I'm turned up a notch or two. And for those who'd like to develop a more closer understanding of who they are and their connection with spirit, I invite them all to do that, because we're all capable of connecting to God, and I believe God or spirit communicates to us all the time. We just tend to unplug ourselves, and that's when we start feeling alone and lost. But we're never alone. We just need to plug ourselves back in to our source.
I think it's a very interesting metaphor.
Yeah.
and visual imagery, especially given your name, Christmas, plugging back in.
Plugging it right back in.
Right. I love the fact that you were in the corporate world. We met and we talked at a level that, you know, was very pragmatic,
mm-hmm.
and practical. In fact, all of our conversations tend to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd love to have you reveal just a bit of your corporate background.
Well, I've worked for several Fortune 5 companies, one being, and I'm in the Atlanta area, Coca-Cola. And I've spent my life doing so. As most people, we all tend to have an idea of our American dream, or our dream wherever in the country or world you are in, of what you want to do for yourself. But what I've discovered about myself is that all of these skills, corporate background and working with people administratively and dealing with people, that was also an extension of me. I love people, so I loved working in environments where I service people. But it came to a point that when I started listening to my own intuition and saying to myself, okay, Christmas, you cannot be something you're not. You cannot run from who you are, which we all tend to have to face. I realized that I had to change direction with my work. So I took all of my practical skills, my background of working in these corporate jobs, and I've applied that to my practice as a reader, an intuitive energy reader of people, and helping them help themselves. So I approach everything very practically, because although I do what I do, I'm a healthy skeptic as well, and I believe everybody should be, because if not, you'll have anybody sell you anything. And I always say, run everything by your own grain of intuition. That's the way you're supposed to do it. And so I practice what I preach. I live it. I've made so many mistakes. I make a joke that I've learned to fall down sideways. So when people see individuals in this role, they think we're like some privileged, you know, crew who has the Batman line to God or something.
Did you say fall down sideways?
Fall down sideways.
Another good one.
Yeah. So I try to speak practically because people live practically. Even though there are those who are privileged, you know, people tend to respond to practical things. So spirituality and being evolved and enlightened is not some way out there foo-foo thing. It's about knowing who you are.
As you know, my background, I have an extensive background in many areas, but one of those areas is homeowner rights and the types of people that you meet and you encounter in these homeowner struggles tend to be quite toxic, and that's why I've called them toxic people. Not all, of course. Some very enlightened and positive board members, etc., but those that create problems for innocent others tend to be very mean-spirited. Mm-hmm. And we've talked up until now at a very intellectual level about all this, but the problem is, of course, most of the people that we have to deal with that make us sick are so negative, and they don't really want to be better than they are. They love where they are.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's your take on that? Because that's something that you can't help. Let me put it another way. How do you help a person deal with the others in their lives who will not and do not wish to change, whether it's a homeowner problem or a boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, family, etc.?
Well, there's a chapter in the book titled Becoming an Active Participant, Avoiding Negativity. And shortly thereafter, there are warning signs, The Many Faces of Self-Destruction. Those two chapters are very good with explaining what I'm about to say. And it's really short and sweet. I try to keep everything short and sweet because, you know, people like to cut to the chase. And with respect to your environment, you know, there are those out there, we know those individuals that are like that. We can't avoid them because, believe it or not, they have a purpose. But the purpose is not to take your power, your joy, your happiness, or overwhelm you, make you feel stripped, devoid of a purpose, or even leave you, in some cases, emotionally or financially bankrupt. And this is where our role in taking responsibility and accountability for our own energy, because oftentimes when we find ourselves in fear mode or insecure mode or any of these modes, and a lot of times life has things that come along that happens to us that helps expedite those emotions and states of mind and even reactions, we tend to give our power away. And so, therefore, we have to really deal with ourselves first, because we don't let anybody do anything to us unless we invite it. And I don't say everyone deserves that. What I'm saying is, if you know somebody is trying to overwhelm you, do something to you negatively, you can put your boundaries there. You can fight back. You can do things to not let this be a roll over you kind of situation. And that's what I mean when I say taking accountability and responsibility. And we have beautiful people like yourself, resources out here, who help people empower themselves with knowledge and information to avoid falling into that negativity trap where they're becoming the victim in this role. So yes, we have those energy grabbers, those addicts who are power hungry and greedy, and they want to take your energy and, again, your resources or your emotional peace of mind or what have you. They're out there. But it's all about you establishing boundaries, and there's so many ways that you can do that energetically. First, by not allowing that to deter you from your point of focus, especially for someone who is going through losing a home or whatnot.
Well, that's not a time where it's easy to think in a positive, proactive way.
It is not.
People are hysterical.
It is not, but it's one that demands that one has to. They have to, and that's the thing. And when you see individuals who find the wherewithal, and really, believe me, and I know it's hard, you find the wherewithal, and then you have the resources like yourself who are out here, and thank God for people like yourself. It helps to level the playing field so a person can at least ground themselves to take the next step. And sometimes it is a second-by-second, day-by-day, minute-by-minute type of thing.
I've had a couple of cases, and you know, we do consultations for homeowners,
mm-hmm.
And I found that oftentimes the process of sharing is more important than the actual final outcome.
Absolutely.
And I've discovered that people will find in themselves a huge reservoir of humor about the situation.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, I have a group of women in one southern state. I've really come to adore them, and they're well over 70, maybe in their 80s, for all I know. And they started documenting all of their problems. They originally came to me for not one, but two consultations, but now they're sending me all their documentation, which is hysterical and very funny. And they could easily be cast in a nice, wonderful Steven Spielberg movie. And in the process of sharing all of that and putting it down on paper and realizing how funny it also appears, they are much stronger today than they were when they came.
Absolutely, and that's just an example of what I was talking about. You describe perfectly, in a very simplistic way, the necessity of what I said in terms of a person having to ground themselves and handle their energy in a positive, proactive way. And what they did was move from a hysterical or fearful state of mind to a optimistic, hopeful situation. And I'd rather see somebody go from 0 to 10 than 0 to 60, because you're going in the right direction. If you're going from depressed to hopeless to optimistic and looking forward to some change, you're still going in the right direction. You may not go 0 to 60, but you're going in the right direction. And again, it's a matter of perception of the situation, taking control of your energy, and shifting your energy in a positive light. There's so many examples of people doing this, and this was a great one that you gave. But the whole point is the energy will migrate itself. If we tend to get on that negative bandwagon, if everyone out here listening notice, things tend to spiral. They get worse. But when we tend to stand and arm ourselves and ground ourselves, despite how difficult it is, start checking our resources, fighting back, refusing to give up, having faith more importantly, then we start seeing the shift of energy takes place. Most often I ask people, I say, when you're in a situation where it calls for faith, how many of you actually believe that you'll be seen through it? And most people don't believe it. And therefore, they tend to just lose their sail just from the get-go. And a faith is a believing in something even though you don't know how. And I say the best way to do that is to go back to an example of any experience where you were in a place where it just looked bleak and you got through it. You remember what it was like being on the other side? And you got through it. You use that energy, you use that memory, you use that example to catapult yourself from the space where you're at now. Because that's the type of energy that gives you that hopeful knowing, because you've been there, you've gotten through it. And even if you've never been through a terrible catastrophic situation or losing a home or whatnot, if you've ever been in any negative situation, take the most recent happy experience where you've felt good, you felt optimistic, and you use that energy, because it is really all about how you use that positive energy to move yourself forward.
What I like to do, and this is in my particular arena, and it's a little different, is if I can give people a strategy of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 things they can actually do.
Mm-hmm.
They take an action.
Mm-hmm.
That action is a positive action.
Mm-hmm.
It just simply changes everything.
Yeah.
Because the minute they've taken 1 or 2, and let alone 5, positive mm-hmm. actions, they feel like they've changed and the situation has changed, even though perhaps nothing has changed.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I totally agree. And that's 5 steps in the right direction. But there are times, though, when some people, they just feel crippled. They feel just, they can't move. I've heard people say, well, what's the point of trying? Or, this is so far gone. It's already in the courts now. Or this is, you know, this is where it is, or this is how it is. There's so many of us who get into the this is how it is.
Well, that's a very good point, and I'd like you to stop there on that one for a second, because what if it is so far gone? What do you tell people?
Well, what I tell people is, first of all, in any situation, the way it appears, rarely are things always the way they appear. I've seen miracles happen at the 11th hour. We have countless examples of those. And when I'm looking at the dominant energy, there's sometimes situations that we've set in motion, because remember, we're always, whether we are aware consciously or not, we're setting our decisions and actions in motion, which by cause of an effect, we're going to be dealing with that. So say we've set some things in motion, or some things have begun to take shape and they're spiraling out of our control. The first thing I do is I have people shift their mindset about it. And it's not going into some fairy tale place where they're trying to pretend like the problem isn't there. It's really shifting their energy or putting them in a position where they can be proactive, because when one feels crippled, they're likely not to move or take any action. And so I try to get them to shift their perception by looking at the various options that may be available that they're not seeing. And in some instances, some options are so dire to the point where they may be worse off than they were. Certain circumstances have to play out to move them from a position where they have no options to an option. And I've seen that with people who felt like, oh my God, I lost my job. And then they find out that because they had to be moved from that job, they had an opportunity somewhere else that paid more money that they weren't getting from the other job in the first place. So everything has a reason, even though it looks very terrible in the way that we can conceive it at the moment. Things are always constantly changing for the better, even if we can't see it. So I try to get people to see that the changes are always for our highest and best, but we're also in the driver's seat of contributing to how that unfolds. And it always starts with how one perceives their experiences, because if they see it negatively and hopelessly, they're never going to be in a position to even think of trying to make changes positively.
They might miss the positive signs altogether.
Altogether, and most often do.
A little tiny sign.
Yeah.
What are the warning signs of self-destruction?
Oh, boy, there's so many. But the most common that we tend to have starts with fear and doubt. Again, the very things that we're talking about. You want to avoid negative people because they breed fear and doubt in you and in your circumstances. Sometimes I tell people, if you're trying to manifest something, you're trying to bring something about, don't tell anybody, because everybody is going to have their two cents about how it might turn out or what likely won't happen. You'll tend to hear that before you hear, good job. And also avoiding situations where, like I gave an example before, going 0 to 60, because we tend to set unrealistic expectations on ourselves from the get-go. So try to be practical. If you know that you want to manifest abundance, like a lot of folks do, well, you know you want to be practical. Let's try to go with handling your money versus, you know, trying to go and jump into an investment where it puts you in a negative situation. Or in some cases, just managing the light bill. So I try to tell people to go from 0 to 60. Trust me, I know all about those. So it's really practical in your approach to moving toward that which you want, and you remove all of the negativity because you're moving in a proactive way, you're moving in a way that is not going to undermine your efforts, and you'll see positive results. So that's totally one way to avoid self-destructive ways or feeling that you're not moving in your life at all. And definitely one of the things that I believe that is really key with self-destruction is that we must avoid self-sabotaging thought patterns. I can't. There's no way. How is this going to happen? When is it going to be? Because right now it's not happening. This is how it is. Those types of things we tell ourselves, those thought patterns, those are all, I believe, learned behaviors, learned conversations. So if we start reprogramming ourselves with positive affirmations, you tend to avoid self-destructive behaviors. And I don't care. I've seen people come from some horrendous backgrounds and families, and they're the most inspirational people, and you know why? Because they've avoided all of these self-destructive behavior patterns. They went the opposite direction.
Because they saw it play out in vivid color.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Oftentimes, I find in my own life that a tiny little victory, a tiny, tiny little victory, like getting someone to reduce the price of something you have to pay for regularly,
mm-hmm.
or cutting your electricity bill, you talked about that,
mm-hmm.
or some tiny little victory over life, maybe, you know, we're talking in financial terms, but it could be spiritual, it could be a new friend, it could be something that we don't normally think of as a victory, but that alone is enough to turn the tide.
Oh, yes, absolutely, because you're going to feel good about it. And anytime you feel good, going back to those two major forms of energy playing out, when you're positive, it migrates and add more to it. When you're negative, it does the same thing. Energy does not discriminate. The dominant energy always takes the lead. And people say, well, Christmas, what do you mean by that? What it means is that it's like the majority rules. So if you have a whole bunch of dominant energy that's negative, then guess what kind of experiences you can imagine and people and things that are going to happen in your life. And if and you contribute to them, too. It's kind of like jumping on the bandwagon. But if you're positive and you're the dominant energy, you can walk into a room full of negative people. And if you're grounded and you're not going to let those folks bother you, then you can change that whole environment of a room. I've done it before. Matter of fact, I often have to do it. So it's one of those situations that you can, even if you're outnumbered, become the dominant energy. And I want to say this to your listeners, especially when we're in the market and economy in which we're in. You can become the dominant energy to what's playing out in your life. You are not some leaf in the wind because everything else around you is blowing all crazy. You can ground yourself like the trees do every day. They've been on this planet a long time, and I haven't seen any of them flying around here like they're out of control. So it's one of those things that you can do.
So that is how, that would be your prescription for avoiding negativity in life generally.
Absolutely, and it's so simplistic, and we're all looking for these Harvard analyses of how to be happy. Matter of fact, I think they teach how to be happy at Harvard now. And
they do. They have a happiness course.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, the most simplest thing, we're looking for some rocket science, you know, deeper than life answers to some of the most simplistic things if we just follow our gut and our intuition. And naturally, research and development and things help support this and find better ways to expand. But, you know, it has to start with the intuition to be led to do research or do anything else. These are innate things, and the tools and the mechanicals around it help support that. But everything starts with what's innate.
I think that the professors who teach the happiness course must be very happy, because imagine being paid to teach about being happy. That's quite nice, isn't it?
It must be.
You know, you don't have to teach quantum physics. You don't have to teach anything too complicated, because as you said, the truth is actually quite simple in this arena.
Absolutely. And those people who are seeking happiness, they'll benefit from it, whether they take it in an environment such as Harvard or whether they go to a community college or attend a workshop or something that I do. The bottom line is people can take information and use it to their best and platform from there. It doesn't have to be a specific way. It doesn't have to come through it doesn't have to come through a Harvard class. It doesn't have to. If you're a seeker of truth and knowledge and you want to make changes, changes start with desire. And that's where you start.
But if they do want the services of a psychic and an intuitive, then they should go to ChristmasMiller.com and they should take a good hard look at your book, your lovely book, The Story of Your Own Experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that, I mean, this has been absolutely delightful, and I hope you'll return to this show again in the future and help us better understand, because this is a topic I feel very strongly about. I'm going to be tackling it from many perspectives, whether it's the toxic board member
mm-hmm.
or the toxic boss.
Mm-hmm. Or neighbor.
Toxic neighbor, definitely in a homeowner association, a lot of toxic neighbors, heard about one today, and so I feel strongly about this issue. I think it is at the heart of some of our unhappiness, and I want to thank you for helping us bring some light and clarity to it. I really appreciate having you with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And this is Dr. Joyce Starr, and that's starpublications.com, that's S-T-A-R-R publications.com, for your books on homeowner rights, health, healing, home, hearth, and rights radio, R-I-G-H-T-S, radio.com. We're talking and looking out for your rights. Thank you very much for being with us today. Bye-bye.